All righty, it's my pleasure to introduce Stanley Klein, and his talk is on what does quantum physics tell us about nature, mind, psi, and divine action. So, Stanley.
Okay, hi. Thank you for showing up. So this is, let me see if I know how to use this gadget. Okay, so this is a talk that is going to be directed for the secular world. And in fact, I just saw that at the 5:45 in this where's the room number? In the same room. Mm-hmm. In the same room is going to be talking to secular colleagues about faith. So that's going to be my theme, is how to present divine action to this secular world to make them interested. So in my talk, I'm not going to use the word divine action too much. I'm going to use the word psychic phenomena, which is mental phenomena that basically violate some of the laws of nature, and in a way that, in a semi-benign way, that I'm hoping will be acceptable to the secular skeptics. So that's the big picture. Is there a... How do I use a pointer? Oh, okay. Okay, so I'm going to begin with the introduction, tell you a little bit about how I got to this. I'm going to advertise this part of the world. And here I mentioned I'm going to be using psychic phenomena to be test. It's a testable way in which it turns out modern quantum mechanics might have to be modified. Just for similar to divine action, if we really want God to do something, we might have to modify some of the basic laws of quantum mechanics. And then I'm going to go into, for those who don't know the quantum mechanics, it's a little bit surprising. It's a very weird theory, so I'm going to go through it in a way that I think is simpler and somewhat surprising. There's also going to be, in fact, a major theme is I've changed the title. It used to say nature up here, but since the theme of this whole conference has brain and mind, I'll be talking about brain and mind. And then the magic word that everybody's going to need, you'll see the word humility popping up again and again, and you had better believe that my colleagues in the secular world do not possess much of this quantity. But quantum mechanics is so weird that people are battling with each other on the hermeneutics, on the interpretations of quantum mechanics. And so that's my approach, that quantum mechanics is so weird that what God and divine action is minor in comparison. And so then we'll end with a big conflict about what the word emergence and reductionism mean. So the introduction is that you better believe it's not just the United States politically is going into chaos, but all around the world, people are fighting with each other over sometimes religious, but just over the whatever. And I don't remember in my lifetime when things have been quite this bad. Maybe in the Vietnam days, maybe there was a period maybe in the 70s that we had similar. And so, okay, so this is my introduction. But here I just have to wax eloquent about where you all are. My mother was a seamstress, father leather color, but we moved to this area when I was 10 years old, and we had, how do I go backwards?
The one on your right hand.
Oh. Can somebody show me how does one go? Which one of these?
You have to click the mouse.
Mouse.
Oh. And I don't have any.
You don't have this one.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we had a chicken farm here in Pomona. I exhibited my chickens here at the LA County Fair, the biggest county fair in the area, well, we were told in the country, but I don't recall. And so I grew up there. Then I went to college here. By a total fluke, I happened to have a summer job. I got a summer job in biology, and by a miracle, like you heard from the Red Rover guy, a miracle happened that in the same lab that I was playing with, there was this guy by the name of Feynman, and they put, anyway, you'll see, I fell in love with Feynman, so I have some Feynman stories. Mm-hmm. Then I went away to get a PhD in physics. Then I married a Scripps girl here. Then I got my PhD. Then I worked for 14 years here at the Claremont Colleges and commuting back and forth on Foothill Boulevard here to back and forth. Anyway, so I love this area coming back. I can't advertise the area. So anyway, so I taught 14 years. And then I switched to neuroscience anyway, that's my history. Feynman, okay, and here, so there is my name up there. I'm afraid to push a button. I'll push it. There's my name, there's this other guy's name. And let me read from The Pleasure of Finding Things Out. Western civilization, it seems to me, stands by two great heritages. One is the scientific spirit of adventure, humility of intellect. The other great one is Christian ethics, the basis of action on love, the brotherhood of all men, the value of the individual, the humility of spirit. Humility. These two heritages are logically thoroughly consistent, but logic is not all. One needs one's heart to follow an idea. I didn't know that Feynman said that kind of stuff. How can we draw inspiration to support these two pillars of Western civilization so that they may stand together in full vigor, mutually unafraid? Is this not the central problem of our time? Is that not something? Yeah, really. Anyway, so we have, I think I'll skip this one, but we've got all these problems. Deep changes in values are needed. How can the secular... So again, I am devoted... there's a lot of people talking about how theology, how to reach, how to make theology compatible and evolution and blah, blah, blah. My mission and the thing of this talk is how to reach the college professors, the high school professors, how to reach the teachers, the community, the secular world to understand that what's going on here at ASA is, they would be shocked at how intelligent people are. So that's what the talk is. And I'm gonna be, again, as I mentioned before, quantum mechanics is so weird, so there's going to be a lot of quantum mechanics talk and introducing from a different point of view how to appreciate how quantum mechanics can actually inform the varieties of experiences. So here's going to be a quick overview of the talk. I was originally going to start with quantum mechanics and give you an introduction to quantum mechanics, but then I realized that let me do it in the context of this particular very famous experiment by Daryl Bem. How many people, just out of curiosity, how many people know the Daryl Bem experiment on erotic, where there's two? How many people, just if I say Daryl Bem? Okay, not many. Okay, so I'll spend some time on clarifying that. Then one of the most important parts of the talk will be the, I think a different, I'm going to emphasize the Born rule. That's going to be the magic thing. So that's something not emphasized often. Then there's going to be the multiple interpretations of quantum mechanics. And so let's just go through a little glimpse. So this is going to be my slide where there's going to be Alice over here. She's going to have to choose two monitors, this monitor, that monitor. She has to pick a monitor. That's at time T1. Then at time T2, there's going to be a quantum random number generator. So all computers that you have a random number generator. You can get a random number. But they're all also, for $100, you can get one that's a quantum effect random number generator, not a deterministic one. And that's what we'll talk a bunch about. And then Alice, this quantum random generator is either going to choose either number one or two, one of these or the other. It's either going to be an erotic image or just a neutral, natural image. And this one, it chose the number two was the erotic image. And it turns out Alice here is got an intuition. She can kind of, one possibility is she can see into the future. And, so that's going to be the thing, that how to explain her seeing into the future. That's going to be the topic. And there's two different ways that she can do that. That's going to be part of the theme of my talk. And here is the mechanism for a quantum random number generator. So, and I will go into this in a little bit gory detail. So I'm just preparing you that quantum mechanics has three steps. There's something called quantum electrodynamics. Then there's some, and that's defined by amplitudes. There's something called probabilities for mixtures. And then as part of the measurement that we're going to be talking about, the Born rule. So that's going to be an important part of what I'm going to go through, and you'll see how interesting it is. This is going to be the hermeneutics, the interpretations of quantum mechanics, and this is, I urge everybody to write this down, interpretations of quantum, Google this, and you will get this picture. And so this is going to be how we are going to show that all the arguments of theologians are minor compared to what's going on in the physics. So that's going to be it. And finally, the very last thing, this will go fast. This is something called emergence, going from physics to biology, chemistry, cosmic. And then here's the five theories that will explain how to get consciousness or how to get divine action or how to get psychic phenomena. They're all, they pretty much, there's five different way. So that's the overview of the talk. So, let's get started. And then I brought a whole bunch of books that are informing, that I think are, and I'll just have those books out here. This is the last talk of the session, so these books I find to be very insightful so that's an introduction of. Stick around if you want to see some of these books. Okay, so now we get into the story. Okay, so I've already told you that here's there's going to be an erotic picture over here. There's an erotic picture of Alice is going to have erotic, and she is going to be looking at one or two. And because she has a feeling, an emotional feeling that's going to happen in the future, and because nature or God or whatever, psychic, there's an incentive to be attracted to erotic things, and Bem found that she gets about 53, whereas chance is 50%. She's getting, the data is, and it's been replicable, she gets about 53% plus or minus one, and it has been replicated by a huge number of other labs. Something like 80 other labs have replicated this. Unfortunately, something like 30 other labs of skeptics. So the 80 labs are by believers, the non-replications are by skeptics, and there's something called the experimenter effect. So this has to be done in the lab of, well, we're going to do it at Berkeley, but also it has to be done by the believers, because skeptics like me happen to have maybe bad vibrations. And so anyway, so that is the precognition. It's called precognition to see into the future. Mm-hmm. It turns out there's another explanation without precognition. And that is by violating the Born rule. So there is going to be something that I'm going to be telling you about when I talk about physics. There's, as part of the measurement theory, it's easy. You can't tinker with some parts of quantum mechanics because then you'll violate the hydrogen element excited states. But there is a way of benignly, modestly violating quantum mechanics without causing much disruption. And that's what we're going to be talking about. Without violating causality, so with done causally without precognition, you can get Alice to choose 53%. So that's going to be the main theme of how, and it's similar to how God might act in the world without really violating the basic laws of quantum mechanics. So that's the important part. It's going to be, very interestingly, when we talk in the next slide, there's going to be this, Henry Stapp, a colleague of mine, has come up with this idea that at the Born rule step, right here, if you have another person, a sentient person, he believes that this is going to happen, that if you have Charlie look at the quantum random number generator before a signal is sent to get it to Alice. So if Charlie looks at it, and he has no idea what Alice did over here. So Charlie is insulated, and that's what all these communications, I didn't say what these are, all of these arrows is every time one of these people makes a decision, does their thing, like when Alice chooses a side, then she sends that information down to a computer, encrypted, to a computer that is governed by the skeptics, and simultaneously to a computer that is governed by the believers. So there can't be any cheating, there can't be any lost data, et cetera, et cetera. This has never, ever been done before for psychic experiments, this collaboration between skeptics and believers to monitor all the information so no data is lost, et cetera, and it's all carefully controlled. So anyway, so that is the experiment. And again, we're going to see there's a possibility of the following kinds of results. So depending on whether Charlie looks or not at the, when the quantum random number generator is going to make its decision, if Charlie looks, there's either case one where there's where Charlie says, if Charlie and, whether Charlie looks or not, okay, let's put it this way, either Charlie looks or doesn't look, if one possible outcome is that it doesn't make any difference, that you'll get psychic phenomena, 53%, whether or not he looks. Another possibility is, depending on whether Charlie looks, one, if he doesn't look, then you get 53, and if he does, you get 50. Another possibility is, and I can go through all these possibilities, the skeptics of the world think, independent of whether Charlie looks or not, it's going to be a chance, okay? So that's going to be a chance. So there's these four possibilities. And you, when we come to the end, when I talk about all the interpretations of quantum mechanics, you'll see that the effect of this experiment, that's never been done by both skeptics and believers, but depending on what the outcomes are, there will be some of the quantum mechanics interpretations will be excluded. Some of the most famous ones will be excluded, and a few of them will survive. And so this is really, it's, in a sense, you can think of it as a test of divine action, but it's because divine action, you can't really, it's hard to make an experiment, but for psychic phenomena, it's easy to make experiments, and the same aspects of mind are relevant. Okay, so now we're going to go to the interesting, the hard part, and let me make sure how fast I, oh, okay, we're doing fine. Okay, so now comes the steps of quantum mechanics. How many people are physicists here? Okay, half, about a third. Okay, so most of you are going to get a very interesting lecture on how quantum mechanics works. There are three steps. One is something called quantum electrodynamics, and that is the step that Feynman and others got Nobel Prizes for making quantum, for another word for it is the Schrodinger equation, but the Schrodinger equation is a non-relativistic, it's been replaced by quantum electrodynamics, and that's been replaced by, the quarks and more complicated stuff, but quantum electrodynamics is the law of how electrons, photons, and protons, those three particles, and that accounts for all the atoms, neutrons kind of are also there, but they don't do much. And so quantum electrodynamics is the modern way to do any calculations, and you can't tamper with it. If you tamper that slightest little bit, if divine action does anything, you mess things up, whatever. Anyway, so step two is you go from the amplitudes to the probabilities, which is the square. If you square the amplitude, and by the way, the amplitude means that you can have this and that, like a cat, Schrodinger's cat. You can have the cat be alive and dead. I don't like the word dead, so the cat is alive awake or asleep. So we can have a cat. So we're going to have an awake cat. And that same cat, that same one cat, is going to be awake and asleep. Doesn't make any sense. How can that cat be awake? And anyway, when it's a probability, then we're back to classical mechanics. The cat is awake or asleep. And so that's the standard. But this is a big transition. It's called the measurement. When a measurement is made, you go from amplitudes to probabilities. Now, there's big arguments on when does the observer actually take impact? When does the observer, who is the observer? Well, John Bell, there's a word that sometimes I won't say it, but FAP. So you have a problem, you go from here to here, FAP, when there's an observation. FAP, what does FAP mean? For all practical purposes. I like the word for the lifetime of the universe purposes. So it might not be exactly to the 100th decimal point, but for all practical purposes, something called decoherence, entanglement with the environment, will do the job, FAP. And that's what is all that we need for here. And then finally, and this is the part that is not fully talked about, is that there's something called the Born rule. So let's just go. So this is the picture of a quant. This is back to my, you remember this familiar thing? Here's the, this is a photon. Here's a half-silvered mirror. The beam can either go here to the erotic outcome, or it can go to the non-erotic outcome. Here's a decoherence that I mentioned in going from the measure, from the amplitude to the probability. And so here it becomes FAP, a mixture. It becomes a probability. And once it's a probability, then it's, we're back into the world of understandability. And then comes, as part of the measurement, here's a probability, but then, you know, which is it, the cat? Let's show the cats. Here's a more complicated, this is a more typical thing, not just a quantum random number generator. Here's a single photon coming in. A photon comes in, then it can do, this one particle can do many things, and then it gets measured, and so it, many of these things disappear, but then a few of these become probabilities, and then this becomes an actuality. And once it's an actuality, then you go back here to, this is an actuality, and then you go step one, two, three, this is step one, two, three, and then you just keep on doing steps one, two, three, and make measurements, and that's quantum mechanics. So now you know quantum mechanics. The only thing I haven't told you, okay, let me say a little bit how you do calculations, because this is my there's the cat. Okay, just I had, it's an awake and asleep cat. And here it's, I didn't want to intrude on this picture, but here it's awake or asleep. And then the actuality, this one happened to stay awake. Now comes the Feynman. So here's a hydrogen atom in the ground state. You can have an electron, a photon coming in, it gets an excited state. And these are called Feynman diagrams, how to calculate the probability for these things to happen. And you can do entanglement if it goes through. Anyway, I'm not going to go into the details, but this is a calculation. If you get this incredible book that I brought with me, it's a book meant zero math. He does the math like the Mayans do math, by counting things. And so these are just more Feynman diagrams that, when you add up, this is just something called the magnetic moment of the electron. It is measured to 13 decimal places. It has been predicted to 13 decimal places, and they're in agreement. And you can't mess with QED. You can't. People have tried fiddling with it to account for some. It's too accurate. And people, Weinberg, anyway, they've tried messing with it. You just can't mess with, it's hard to mess with quantum electrodynamics. So here we are, the Born rule. So let me now emphasize what the Born rule is. The Born rule is that the random probabilities are, to go from probability to actuality is done randomly. So all you have to do, if you want divine action, if you want qualia, if you want subjectivity, if you want mental, it's very easy, especially if it's mental. Oh, the Born rule has been tested to about 3 decimal places in the lab without any mental. But if you say that part of the collapse, which is the von Neumann, which is a very popular interpretation, that to make a measurement, you have to have sentience, and you'd better believe the Born rule has never been tested. Okay, so now we're going to go very fast. If you go to this interpretations of quantum mechanics, you're going to you're going to see this is it, but this is so complicated. All of these are the people who have done the interpretations over the years. Here's is it deterministic, is it real, is it blah, blah, blah. All the different, these are called metaphysical principles, and all these different interpretations are incredibly different. So one of the things that I've done with my colleague Chris is we've organized them into a more logical, like these are epistemic, these are ontic ontologies, and one of the things that you find between this one and this one is that these are dualistic on whether something is real, or here these are the idealists are not real and these are real. And so since 1976, 40 years ago, I have had this license plate. And it's because duality can be unified because all the predictions from all of these are the same. So there's no experiment that can be done. Well, Penrose is the one exception here. Here's the objective. Penrose, right here, is one that might have a little difference because of gravity. Okay, so I'm going to now just go... So I've done already number four. That's the multiple interpretations. And now my final little point is how to do emergence. And this will take me 1 minute, I hope. Okay, I'm going to just go. So this is the standard emergence, physics, going chemistry, blah, blah, blah. You can also get reduction. It's the opposite of, here the arrows go up. Reduction turns out, everybody thinks reduction means the arrows go down, and Bill Newsom gave a talk that, no, but most scientists know that in many of these things, like neuroscience and biology, is so complicated, there's top-down influences all over the place, and so you have to put an adjective in front of reduction. And here is the... I changed this slide. This is the complexity. Just when you get up to this upper level, things are so complicated that you see... And here I'm just doing a this is my communication. This is my slide where I'm showing that the God concept can be just emergent from all this complexity over here. And then for the rest of us, and many people want to have God here. And so in my, this is the categories of reductionism. And I want to just put down here, splitting it between my measurement and the QED. And here's cosmic mind. And now, this is coming my last slide. How do all the different complex ideas of things like emergence of consciousness, how does consciousness fit in? Or the force, if you know Star Wars, yes. How do these things fit in? And so turns out there are five. I'm happy to talk to you about these. There are five different interpretations. The Hindus, for example, would have consciousness or God coming first, before the Big Bang. Others would modify QED of psychons. I love Tegmark's word perceptronium. That was featured in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago. And so we can talk more about that after this meeting. In summary, connecting the subjective... So quantum mechanics, with all the fighting going on between all those different interpretations, the principles that people are fighting about are more complex and more weird than all the fights, in my mind, that are going on between the different religions. So anyway, metaphors, be with you. And I have all these books to look at afterwards. So thank you.
Right. But how Charlie's second observation enables Alice to do 53% on a totally random number generator, that still seems like magic to me.
Yes. Can you help me at all? Thank you. Let me help you with a picture. Okay, so Charlie, where's Charlie? Here, okay. So the issue is that if Charlie does not look, if there's no Charlie, this initial thing by Alice is done 50-50. This thing, she doesn't have any precognition, violates quantum electrodynamics.
Okay.
And so she can't, you can't, and oh, the Whiteheadians, process theology, I have some process theology books. You can't, you can have all sorts of telepathy, clairvoyance, psychokinesis, but you cannot have precognition because Whitehead and process theology insists that you can't, that the future is to be had. You can't predict.
How is Charlie?
Okay, so as Charlie is not looking, then here, the quantum random number generator can, by nature's choice, so nature, we're going forwards in time, nature or divine action or a Platonic Penrosian Plato wants to have humans or sentient life, not just humans, but little animals, wants to have sexual things be attractive. And so nature, let me just use the word nature. Nature at this point, in going from here to here, the Born rule. So the Born rule is going from, anyway, the Born rule we saw, nature is going to lean, not going backwards in time, but is going to affect the Born, it's going to affect the quantum random number generator in going to the erotic image. But if Charlie looks, and that's in the next slide, so if Charlie looks, then nature doesn't, because then the collapse will happen right here, and that's how you'll not get, that's why you'll get the 50%, because the Born rule can't be modified, because Charlie's already done the collapse. So that's how Charlie comes in.
Experiment been run without Charlie?
No. We have put in we've put in a grant proposal to we can do it easily for I can just hire a lab assistant to do it, but I'm on the skeptic side that I think it'll always be 50%. But at Dean Radin at the Ions in Petaluma, there are psychic experimenters that if we can get funded to pay for his lab to do it. But with encrypted things coming to my lab. So that has the experiment has not been done yet.
Who are you asking the funding from?
I talked with NSF. That was about 2 years ago, but I haven't.
Kevin Arnold.
No. There's a place in Seattle.
Templeton.
This is all very new. There's a place in Seattle that just got some funding, and so we've submitted a grant there.
So you mentioned that there were many experiments done by believers.
Yes.
And many done by skeptics.
Yes.
Did they all have Charlie on one side? And
No. This is Henry Stapp. No. The Charlie intervention, which is the most important intervention, because the Charlie, if Henry Stapp came up with the Charlie idea, if Charlie's looking at the quantum random number generator, kills the 53% and goes to 50, then all the interpretations, except for von Neumann, the ones that have that require human, so many. Many of the interpretations, you can have a camera, you can have decoherence, you can have many other things that do the collapse. But Henry Stapp, and there's a number, there Wigner for a while, maybe even, anyway, there's a number of people that think that for the true collapse, you need a sentient observer, and Bohr, even. And so this is this would be a very awesome thing that, no, that the Charlie intervention, nobody's even talked about that until about a year ago. Henry Stapp came up with that idea. Yeah, so it's a clever.
Maybe one more question, but okay. We'll have to have it.
Yeah, but we'll, you know, I'll say it here afterwards.
So
yeah.
I noticed that Robert Griffiths was one of those,
yeah.
And I was
That's
thinking,
right.
Oh, surely he's there. Yeah, I was kind of attracted to his views, to some of the mysticism out of stuff, although I had a real hard time reading his book. But as I interacted with him some, and I believe he's a Christian.
Which one, Griffiths?
Yeah, consistent.
Yeah, he's up there, very very similar.
Consistent historian.
Oh, is he?
I think so.
Oh, okay. So, is there any sense of Bohr and so on in that crowd?
I
was just wondering, what is someone's faith perspective? How does that influence where they fall? Is there any sense of that?
I would think that the faith perspective, there on this one here, the human observer role, to have human be the controlling observer, I would think that you would want to, a faith perspective would want to have a yes. So that would be Copenhagen, that would be relational, and that's von Neumann. And this is down here. So we're talking to, Everett's passed away, but so we are talking to these people, and this is my colleague who's a co-author on this, Chris Cochran, is an anthropologist. He's a graduate student. He's just finishing his graduate degree in anthropology. He's gone around interviewing a lot of these people, and we are in communication with all the living ones on whether, especially this down here, it's very confusing how to clarify. Oh, you'd better believe that the definitions of some of these words, like the word real, the word locality, there's and counterfactual definiteness, a lot of, there's confusion about what the words mean. Yeah, anyway, I'm going to be staying here afterwards.
Thank our speakers.